This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Next speaker, Dr. John Roberts, needs very little introduction. We all know John, who has been the director of the abdominal transplant service at UCSF now for 15 years, really our fearless leader. And in terms of HCC research, John has been a great collaborator, supporter, and mentor for many years. And what impressed me most about John is his ability to really think outside the box and the ablate and wait concept that he thought about and then put into print is really a prime example for this. And I truly think that this is a shift in paradigm that we will see in the next few years in terms of how to manage a patient with HCC on a waiting list. John?
Well, the stuff I'm going to talk about is really Francis's work, and you'll see sort of this progression. And Rio talked about changes that are going to happen in terms of allocation of organs, United States, livers, United States, and actually, Rio was chair of the HCC committee, and just this last week, the board of the OPTN or UNOS board passed some more changes based on some of the work that we've done, and Rio was the chair of that committee and really sort of led these new policy changes that he didn't mention, but I think they're important to hear about. So, talking about the time is it time for new criteria now that we have effective local regional therapy? And I'm going to try and go fast like Rio and Chris, but we're already so far behind. So the criteria that we currently have for HCC is the Milan criteria. And the Milan criteria have done really a great job in demonstrating which patients have outcomes similar to patients without HCC. So there's a group of HCC patients that's selected by the Milan criteria that have good outcomes, and the question, why do we need better criteria? And these are the Milan criteria. One lesion less than 5 centimeters. If you have more than one lesion, no more than 3, and none of those can be greater than 3 centimeters. And if you look at this slide, you can see those patients that met the criteria, that's their outcome. Really, these are the disease free survival curves, and you can see out to 48 months, it's about a 90% disease-free survival. So the Milan criteria work really well in selecting patients who are going to do well after transplant. And then here's, some looking at sort of a conglomeration of a variety of studies, and you can see that even the four-year survivals, patient survival are actually quite good, and the disease-free survivals are quite acceptable when you look at patients who get transplanted with hepatocellular carcinoma. So really the question is that if we have these criteria where the outcomes are quite good, why do we need new criteria? And this slide demonstrates that reason. Is there a pointer up here? Sorry. The mouse, I couldn't make it. Oh, there it is. Okay, thanks. So these are the good criteria, but what about all these people? You think about it, here's a disease-free survival, or sorry, recurrence-free survival that at 48 months is 60%. Man, for cancer, wow. Why? But we're not transplanting those people. And so you wonder, well, maybe there's some of those people that are in there that we could transplant if we had different criteria. And that's really what we're trying to do. And so this is a sort of another look at the Milan criteria where you have, there's the mouse. Here's the size of the largest nodule. Here's the number of nodules. And you can see if you have a 2-centimeter nodule and you have one nodule, you have a you know, pretty good survival. If you have, you know, three nodules that less than 3 centimeters, you have a 65% survival. And so these are pretty good things. And this is where we are today. If you look at the group of patients, say, that we're going to serve, here's the people that have no more than 3 lesions. Here's the 1 to 5 centimeters. But if you look at the outcomes of looking at pathology, you can see really what we're trying to do is predict those patients who have micro or macular vascular invasion, because if you don't have any vascular invasion, your survivals are quite good. And really what you're looking at is trying to find criteria that predict for microvascular invasion. Usually we can pick up macrovascular invasion on the pre-transplant study. So really the recurrence then is related to the size and number of tumors. The vascular invasion on the explant is a strong predictor of recurrence. Unfortunately, we don't have that information until afterwards, so we use the surrogates of size and number to help us predict the risk of vascular invasion. And so the question is, can we expand the size and number beyond Milan without increasing recurrence? So Francis wrote the paper which we developed the UCSF criteria, and this was a slight increase in size. So instead of one lesion less than 5 centimeters, one less than 6.5, a little expansion in the size of 2 to 3 lesions, and then we said the total tumor diameter had to be less than 8 centimeters. So if you added them all together, they had to be less than 8 centimeters, and that these were really an expansion of the entry criteria, but still we're using size and number to predict recurrence. And when you look at it, it's sort of a moderate increase in the size. And so what it's... These people got jealous of the Milan criteria and the UCSF criteria, and there's now the Kyoto criteria and a million other criteria, and everybody sort of massaged the numbers a little bit. But when you look at it, it's even with the UCSF criteria, you're only going to get probably 10% more of the patients that exceed Milan criteria but remain within UCSF criteria. And so the question is, can we really serve more patients? And so what we're really trying to do is to figure out which patients have biologically favorable tumor. And what one of the thoughts was to wait and see which tumors behave poorly, and then hope that the tumor doesn't change while you wait. You can also measure something about the tumor that predicts the biology, and people have spent a lot of effort on this: microsatellites, doing a bone marrow aspiration, looking for HEPAR1, looking for albumin mRNA in the serum, and then looking at alpha fetoprotein. And I'll get back to that at the end. So really, one of the strategies would be is to take patients and downstage them from the expanded criteria to within the Milan criteria, give them a period of time to see who drops out, and then do a transplant. And that's one of the things that we suggested back in 2010. And really what it was based upon was this idea that local regional therapy for HEC can serve as a prognostic marker for outcome. And so what you do is you treat somebody and then see what happens to them. And those people that do well, that have a good response to therapy, would be people that you would consider for transplantation. So Dr. Yao wrote this paper looking at our downstaging protocol, which was the idea is taking people that had tumors beyond Milan, downstaging them so that they fit within Milan, and then transplanting those people that had an outcome of effective downstaging. And so our downstaging criteria, you could have a one lesion that's greater than 5 centimeters or less than 8 centimeters, 2 to 3 lesions, each less than 5 centimeters, with a total tumor diameter of all the lesions to be less than 8 centimeters. And if you have 4 or 5 lesions, none greater than 3 centimeters, with a total tumor diameter of less than 8. And so when you go back to our thing, you can see that we're continuing to expand this now to quite a few more patients. And just to show you what that looks like, we found patients that met our criteria. There are 122 of them. If you look at this area here, you can see that about a third of the patients ended up dropping out. So these were patients that had tumor beyond Milan, and then, after we downstaged them, then they ended up having tumor progression that excluded them. We did have about two-thirds of the people that had an adequate treatment response. Of those 81 patients, 65 went to deceased donor transplant, three had living donor transplant, and at the time the paper was written, there were nine patients still awaiting deceased donor liver transplant. And so if you look at the outcomes of these patients, that looking at the downstaged group compared to our Milan group, you can see that the survival is exactly the same. And then the recurrence-free probability was actually almost as good. And so what this shows is that you can take patients beyond Milan, treat them with this downstaging, wait a period of time to see who has a tumor that has biologic bad behavior, and then go ahead and transplant the other people. And so Dr. Mehta, who's one of our junior faculty, unfortunately he's taking call today, so wasn't able to come up here, but he just recently wrote this paper in cooperation with the transplant center at CPMC and at Scripps in San Diego, looking at the outcome of downstaging in three different centers. Now, Region 5 has a variance where we can downstage patients to within Milan criteria and then transplant them. And so these are three of the centers in Region 5 that had actually looked at this. And Neil presented this at the plenary session, the clinical papers plenary session at 2000. Sorry, the recent ASLD meeting. And I have to say that there was more people standing up to ask questions than for any other abstract at the plenary session. Unfortunately, they didn't allocate enough time for him to answer all the questions. But basically, these are the UCSF criteria, looked at these three different centers. We had the successful downstaging criteria, and then they looked at dropout and tumor recurrence after liver transplant. And so you can see there are 187 now. The dropout rate was still the same. About a third of the people end up dropping out. Two-thirds of the people had a treatment response, of which 106 got deceased donor transplant, and then there were some that were still waiting. And the median follow-up was 4.3 years. And then you can see UCSF versus the other two centers combined. There's no difference in recurrence-free probability. So it shows that actually other centers can do this as well as we can, which was one of the criticisms, is that, well, it really works well at UCSF, but does it work at other centers? And it seems to. So the downstaging, we can downstage patients, and we can, if we wait and see if they will show us if they have bad biology, we can then transplant them, and they actually do extraordinarily well after liver transplantation, suggesting that we can expand the criteria beyond where we were before. So one of the things that's an important paradigm in this is that you really need to wait. So you have to, after you downstage them, you have to wait and give time for that tumor to show its whether or not it's going to be a bad actor or not. And so one of the thoughts is that maybe all patients should have ablation and wait, be ablated and then wait, rather than, you know, even if they're within Milan criteria, because we know that some of the people with Milan criteria also have bad tumor biology. And so one of the things that we took advantage of was to look at the differences in time to transplant that Rio outlined across the country. And so if you look at the time to transplant for patients with HCC exception, you can see that there's quite a variation depending on your region across the United States, where about two-thirds of the patients, the time to transplant is less than 120 days. If you go and look at what happens to those patients that are at centers where they get transplanted with less than 120 days or more than 120 days, you can see that if you wait a while, you actually have a better outcome in terms of your post-transplant recurrence, because you had let that tumor show up depending on their biology. And this is all tumors. And, you know, we know the smallest tumors don't have a lot of risk. But if you stratify them by risk, so that we think that the patients that are have tumors that are 2 to 3 tumors greater than 2 centimeters, you can see that those are the highest risk patients, and they have the greatest benefit from waiting more than 120 days. And so that's one of the thoughts, is to change the allocation system so that all patients have to wait in order to, before they can go on to get transplanted, and so they would have local therapy and then wait. And this is just showing another high-risk group in terms of those patients with high alpha fetoproteins, and you can see that waiting for those people that are at the highest risk also ends up having the greatest benefit, because it's those patients, say, with high alpha fetoproteins who are likely to have bad biology. And if you downstage them and wait, then you're going to be able to find out which patients truly are going to have good biology and should be transplanted. So Dr. Bilal Hamid and Francis did a recent paper looking at adding AFP as a criteria and found that if you have an AFP greater than 1,000, your hazard ratio of dropping out from downstaging was about two and a third times higher than patients who had an alpha fetoprotein less than 1,000, or those patients that had more than three treatments were also at higher risk of dropping out. And so this just demonstrates that patients that have a high alpha fetoprotein, even with downstaging, are still at higher risk in terms of dropping out. And this would suggest that we need to decrease, if we can't decrease the alpha fetoprotein with downstaging, that maybe those patients shouldn't get transplanted. And this is just a larger paper demonstrating sort of the risk of alpha fetoproteins in terms of outcomes in the French study. And you can see that alpha fetoprotein greater than 1,000 really demonstrates a higher risk of dropout. This was without not, they didn't have downstaging as part of this. So alpha fetoprotein may be an important aspect of deciding which patient shouldn't get transplanted. So even if you apply an alpha fetoprotein cutoff of greater than 1,000, you can see that it resulted in exclusion of only about 5% of the patients from liver transplantation, but those it led to a 20% decrease in reduction of the post-transplant HCC recurrence. And so we're now, in our protocol, require if you have an alpha fetoprotein greater than 1,000, you have to get it down to less than 500 with local regional therapy. And so that's, you know, one of the ways that we're trying to decrease our recurrence rates. And so one of the strategies then is to take patients with expanded criteria, downstage them to within Milan, and also take people within Milan and downstage them also, wait a period of time, look at their alpha fetoprotein, know that some of those patients are going to drop out, but you'll have salvaged a large number of patients that you would have excluded using the Milan criteria. And so really what we've ended up doing is taking these patients in this group, selecting out patients that are going to do as well as the top group, and then allowing those people having adequacy to transplant. Now, one of the things in that top group is there may be patients that never would have needed a transplant, and that's sort of the last sort of topic, is that Neil had also looked at, if you looked at patients that had just one lesion, 2 to 3 centimeters, who had a complete response to their first ablation therapy, and had a low alpha fetoprotein, that if you looked at the risks of those people dropping out for having expansion of their tumor or tumor growth is actually very low. And so there may be a group of patients that we would just ablate and wait a very long period of time and not transplant those patients. And so that's a suggestion that maybe in that top group there's some people that could get by without needing a transplant. And so really this is the one that you can see, that those people with small lesions, a complete first treatment response, low alpha fetoprotein, that their dropout from the waiting list actually is quite low. So this would sort of, the last thing is to take patients that have Milan criteria, expanding criteria, downstage everybody, look who's low risk, say those patients can wait and we'll see what happens, take out the people with high alpha fetoproteins, and then transplant the rest, and we should be able to transplant a group of patients that have a very high likelihood of success. So one of the things that Rio's committee did is to make two recent changes in the OPTN policy, and one of them is to delay the hepatocellular carcinoma score assignment by 6 months. So when people are identified with hepatocellular carcinoma, they're going to have to wait 6 months before that score starts going up, and that's going to have two effects. One, it's going to equalize the waiting time for people that have hepatocellular carcinoma and those people without, because right now we're transplanting more people with hepatocellular carcinoma and really disadvantaging those people without hepatocellular carcinoma. And the second is this ablate and wait for those areas that have a high transplant rate, early transplant rate, and probably would benefit, some of those patients would benefit by not undergoing immediate transplantation, that this change will will also help us sort of in this blade and weight theory. And so that's an important change. The other change was is that, again, we have this disparity among people that don't have hepatocellular carcinoma competing with these people with hepatocellular carcinoma who actually are probably over-advantaged in the current system. And so there's now going to be a cap so that patients with hepatocellular carcinoma can't go above 34. So as you know, we do regional sharing at 35. This will make them... they can't go above 34. And so that also, we think, is going to advantage those patients who don't have a hepatocellular carcinoma who are at somewhat currently at a disadvantage. So I think the new criteria are going to be trying to expand the UCSF, sorry, the Milan criteria to the UCSF downstaging. So we'll just give up. I think in the long run, what we want to do is give up on the Milan criteria, just say they can fit the UCSF criteria. Everybody gets downstaged. Everybody waits. And then you exclude people that don't respond in terms of their alpha fetoprotein, and then you take the people with low risk and just watch them. And I think, you know, that's to me is kind of where we ought to go in our new allocation policy for HCC. It'll take us a long time to get there, but I think this is a plan, you know, based on what Francis, Neil, Bilal, and Rio have done, really is kind of where I think we should end up. And I think UCSF has been part of that, and I'd like to thank these people that really sort of helped develop this data. Thank you.
Great. Any questions from the audience? Yes.
Sorry, I'm on call, so I'm going to go to a liver tonight, but doesn't have HCC. So if you look at the what you're really saying is that what we really want to know is what's in that liver. What does that tumor look like beforehand? You know, would a biopsy help looking at state of differentiation? And really, it's microvascular invasion. State of differentiation has sort of come in and out of the models in terms of its importance, but we're really trying to look at that tumor and decide from a looking at pathology slide, is that tumor going to be a bad actor? The problem is that it's hard to biopsy. Two, you have sampling errors, and so people have said, well, you know, that's not a perfect indication, which is why we've been using the Milan criteria. Now we may end up going back to biopsy to try and help us call out those patients who aren't going to do well, but you can imagine that we're going to biopsy a lot of people and that we already know are going to do pretty well to try and find those few that aren't. So I think that's sort of the reason why, you know, that it's a problem in terms of biopsying the patients. Another question in the back? Well, so generally, if you look at our strategy, the first round is that they get, almost all of them get chemoembolization as the first thing. And when I talk about ablation, everybody thinks I'm talking about radiofrequency ablation, but we really start with chemoembolization, and then about 20% end up getting both RFA and chemoembolization. Some of those end up getting it done laparoscopically because of, you know, the position of the tumor, but really see what happens, you know, with the chemoembolization, and then if we don't have perfect response, then either do repeat that or go with radiofrequency ablation. Mike? Well, so the board passed those new criteria just, I don't know, Tuesday or Wednesday, and it must have been Wednesday. And so I would say that they have to program the computers probably 6 months. 6 months to a year. Yeah, that would be my estimation. It just sort of depends on the complexity of programming the computer, but you know, it's going to change, you know, significantly. Mike's one of our coordinators, so he's obviously very interested in how this is going to change his life. Yeah, the other ones are down the road. That's you know, my pipe dream. Rio's already got the his pipe dream's been fulfilled. Mine's waiting.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.